Hello, everyone, and welcome back once again to another episode of the Trino Community Broadcast. We've got an exciting talk about another Trino client, perhaps the most important Trino client, or one of the most used, depending on how you want to look at it. My name is Cole Bowden. I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Manfred Moser. Manfred, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm recovering from the craziness of last week that was Trino Fest and Trino Contribute Congregation, and I came home and did a bunch of gardening, and I think I did catch a cold.
Happens sometimes when you travel, you know, that's just the way things go. But Trino Fest last week, it was actually started about this time last week.
Yeah, that's
true. If you missed it, you can now see all of the YouTube videos of every single talk given at the event on the Trino YouTube channel, which may be where you are right now. So take a look at that. It'll be uploaded in the videos section. You can take a peek and see which talks interest you. Some of them were really good. Stay tuned to the Trino website as well, where we're going to recap and give a little more insight into each of them. But the abstracts are in the description, so you can go look at those. Feel free to comment, like, share the ones that you think are the most important to you or the exciting or interesting. It was a great event. We had a lot of great speakers. Thank you to all of them once again for making Trino Fest happen.
Yeah, and also thank you to our sponsors who helped us make this a reality. It was great to see Commander Banban in person for many of the people posting photos with Commander Banban in their LinkedIn feeds and stuff. So it's been really good.
Yeah, but that aside, we have something to talk about today. Before we get into the topic of today's broadcast, we have to talk about Trino releases. We've had a couple huge ones, Manfred.
Yeah, we will be talking about powering business intelligence with Trino. But before we do that, we talk about two releases, which are 449 and 450. Can you believe it? 450.
Yeah, that's a big number. We're approaching 500 already. That'll happen probably about this time next year, or a little past then. Anyway, in 449, we have Open Lineage Event Listener. There's a talk about that at Trino Fest, so you can go hear about that. Support for views when using the Iceberg REST catalog.
Also, by the way, before I forget, the Open Lineage Event Listener is actually only working in 450. So if you want to try that, you need to actually use 450 because there was a little bug that we fixed when loading it. So it's working in 450.
Perhaps we should move that release note down one release and pretend like it doesn't exist in 449. We've improved performance for writing to Parquet files in Hive, Iceberg, and Delta Lake, and improved quality delete performance in Iceberg, which evidently is a huge performance improvement. So
yeah, Dane has been waiting for that to land forever. And I know that various people, like, for example, also our sponsors at Upsolver, who deal with that kind of stuff of like deleting files in Iceberg regularly, really love the performance improvements. They were mentioning something like 50% and more performance improvements on those operations. And that's not something that comes easily. So that's good.
Then in 450, we had performance improvements for a ton of different functions. Support for concurrent update, merge, and delete queries in Delta Lake. So if you're using it for the transactionality, you and your friends can all be updating and deleting data without having to worry about causing problems. Support for reading uniform tables in the Iceberg connector. Support for truncate in Iceberg and memory. And we've also simplified configuration in BigQuery. Usually configuration only gets more complicated. So removing a property and just saying, no, it's always going to be this way with scan parallelism should make things a little easier. But if you had it configured previously, make sure you remove that property. It no longer exists.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, it's actually hard to make it user-friendly because you have to make your code smarter to do the right thing. And in this case, we succeeded.
Yeah, you know, we're always adding more. So the opportunity to say, no, this option should always be set this way and the users don't need to know about it is helpful sometimes. In any case, that's written for the last two Trino releases. They're really big releases. If you haven't updated in a while, I would strongly recommend 450. There's a lot of improvements and fixes in there. One thing not mentioned here is there was a very small, flaky correctness issue where there was a like low-level cache used in a bunch of different connectors for different things. And I think it was 0.00003% of the time values were removed or updated and cached at the same time. Threads could get into a race condition where one thread would remove the value and another thread would temporarily bring the old value back. So that's a good bug fix to have. I mean, it probably doesn't impact you, but when it does, you don't want those results to be wrong. So it's a good like correctness issue for caching. Anyway, I think that's it from us on the release.
Hang on, one thing I wanted to mention. It's also related to the Juno Contributor Congregation. In the line where you said that your support for Truncate was added in the Iceberg and Memory Connector, that's related to an initiative that we have and where we want people to also contribute if they can. We would love for the Memory Connector to support all our SQL statements. Currently, it doesn't actually do that, but it would be really, really helpful for testing and also for general usage in like super simple use cases to play around for beginners. And we ticked one more off. Truncate is now supported, which is really good. Obviously, things like views and materialized views will become a bit more complicated. Truncate is just deleting all the records in the table. So that's pretty easy.
Well.
But it's good to have.
And with that all said, Manfred, we can move on to our guest and topic of the day.
Yeah.
We have Patrick from Creative Data here to talk about development and implementation of Power BI with Trino. Patrick, welcome to the Trino Community Broadcast.
Oh, you're muted.
No. Hi, everybody. Nice to be
there
here.
There we go. How are you doing today, Patrick?
I'm fine. And you?
Doing great. It's always a nice day we can start it off with talking about some cool tools in the Trino ecosystem. And you're here today to talk to us about development and just how to use Power BI with Trino, which is a really core use case for this. It's one of the most prominent visualization tools out there.
Yeah, I have to admit, I snooped a bit what Patrick was up to. And funnily enough, he's also Austrian like myself. He's also not in Austria anymore.
I also was wondering if I'm the first Austrian guest here.
No, you're not. Marius Kramer joined us, but he's originally not Austrian, but he lives in Vienna now. So I think he is Austrian citizen. But funnily enough, he lives in Vienna now, which is what I found out. You were an IT manager a long time ago. Like you worked in the city of Vienna or so, right?
Yes, I was working for the city of Vienna. That's right, but that's a long time ago.
I know, this is LinkedIn, but still, nevertheless, that's cool. So you have a long career in IT, and like you've been touching business intelligence, as they call it, and reporting and stuff for a long time, have you?
Exactly. Before I entered the the data space, I worked as an IT manager, and general knowledge about IT applications, IT administration, IT support, and all these kind of things, and even budgeting and this kind of stuff. So yes.
And now you're in Spain, we hear, close to the ocean. That's very nice, although it must be getting hot there. But who knows? Cola is also probably pretty hot in San Diego. So.
It stays mostly cool here.
And here it's mostly raining. So it's the north of Spain. It's the coldest part of Spain, so it's not really hot. I think the hottest it can get, it's 30 degrees. It's already hot here. So.
Oh, yeah. So that's similar to here. All right, cool. So let's talk about Power BI and what you're doing with it and what Creative Data is also doing.
Yeah, you're at Creative Data. You're the owner and co-founder of this. What's Creative Data about? What do you do there?
Exactly. I created Creative Data here in Spain 2.5 years ago. We specialize in designing and implementing sustainable data and AI architectures. We are also already Microsoft and Databricks partner. And we also participate and coordinate research and innovation projects, which are mostly funded on a national or European level.
Okay, so EU research projects, stuff like that.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So this is about using data for good and improving the world and driving meaningful insights.
That's the idea, yes.
Yeah.
Sustainability also.
So what do you think? Do you have any key findings you've had or results you've been able to uncover or recommendations that the data has been able to drive that you think are worth bragging about?
We are still in the loop. I mean, we are still starting. But I think an interesting part about sustainability in data architectures is also programming languages. like in terms of memory and carbon footprints and everything related. And that's what we also mean with sustainable data and the architectures, not only memory usage and carbon footprint, but also making intelligent technology choices at the beginning of a project to not run into any problems later on. So also, that's why we like to use open technologies, open source technologies. Yes.
Okay. Opinions about the rooms full of Bitcoin miners running 24/7, consuming all the electricity.
Yeah, well, I mean, nowadays they're all running AI models, so that's going to be like really bad for for that sort of sustainability, right?
It's okay. That's what solar and batteries are here to fix eventually. We'll get there.
Exactly.
But yes, LLM is another level. That's really the energy usage there is immense.
Yeah.
So Power BI, though, you're here to talk about how we implemented Power BI in Trino, how it works, how it runs. Do you want to give anyone who may not be familiar an overview of what Power BI is?
Yeah, it's a lot, actually. I would call it a self-service BI tool. Probably, as you said, I think the most famous one out there. But I would say it has three parts. It's not only data visualization, it's also data integration. So you have like Power Query as part of Power BI, which is data integration and ETL transformations. Then you have the, let's say, in-memory analytical engine behind the scenes and the storage, like the semantic layer, let's call it. And then at the end, you have also the visualization layer. So it's like three things in one, you could say. It's not only data visualization. And I think not a lot of people know that it's more than data visualization.
So that's the Power Platform or whatever, right?
But I would see the Power Platform apart from Power BI. Power Platform, I would say Power BI is for analytics, and Power Platform is like a low code environment for building applications, let's say.
Oh. Wow, it goes.
But yes, you could also see Power BI as part of the Power Platform, but it's actually, I think it's not really integrated, because now you also have the whole new Fabric system. Yeah.
Wow. So you were encountering this Power BI. I mean, obviously, it's a Microsoft product, which probably means that lots of people that are already paying for, I don't know, Office and Teams and whatever else also end up getting a Power BI license, or at least Microsoft tries to rope into them. So it's fairly widely used, I'm guessing, right?
Exactly. Also for me, because I've been in the data space working and also in the Microsoft and Azure ecosystem for over 10 years. So. And when I started, I think I started still with Excel, which was then, I think, 1 year later, it was more and more replaced by Power BI. And also, this was the time when all the cloud migration happened, customers moving to the cloud. And this was my start, but it was, I'm using it since the beginning. So, yeah.
Wow. So you're also like certified veteran MVP, whatever, something.
Well, I'm actually not, no. But yes, we are also designing and developing custom connectors, as this one for Trino, for example. But I also developed a wrapper around an existing Delta Lake function, which allows then a native connection to Delta tables also directly from the connector without anything in between. And we also develop custom visualizations in Power BI.
And those all those things, like, are they open source or generally
the connectors, yes, they're open source.
And then you use them in your products for customizations for your customers, so they can, like, you create custom reports for them and that kind of stuff as well, and like custom visualizations and help them with that, or?
Not really. The custom connectors, they were both born because of curiosity, I would say, not really use cases. Also, the Trino connector was born because of curiosity. And I'm happy that nowadays it's being used.
Yeah, so tell us about how did you, like, I mean, you're very much in the Microsoft ecosystem. You mentioned Databricks, so you're also in data. So you're definitely also in the big data world. But how did you stumble into Trino, or like, how did you find out about Trino?
I think it was 2020 or 2021, something like this. I read about, so it was a coincidence. I read about Dask SQL. It was Dask SQL, I think, which is a distributed Python query engine, I think you could call it. And I was interested in this back then because it allowed SQL syntax on top of distributed in-memory data frames. And I was wondering whether you could also connect to this in-memory data frame from outside. And it turned out that yes, you could. And the author was reusing the Presto-Wire protocol. And that's where everything started, because the author said he didn't want to rewrite an ODBC driver. He reused the Presto-Wire protocol. And before, I also already knew about Trino. I think that Trino Presto SQL separation was just before that. And I also knew at this time about Power BI custom connectors. And I knew this was the perfect use case, because Power BI custom connectors, it's really useful if you have a REST API, essentially, and build like a wrapper around it that it's consumable like a normal database.
Yeah, and that's obviously the Trino API for client tools is a REST API. And then we have wrappers around it, like the JDBC driver, the CLI. Mm-hmm. Companies like Starburst have ODBC drivers. And then we have a Python client, and we're soon going to get another client. So there's lots of those clients around. So is that sort of like where yours falls, but it's kind of custom for Power BI?
Yes. So my connector is really a wrapper around the REST API, and it's reusing. There is a web connector built in Power BI, and it's reusing this connector for connecting to Trino. So you can use the connectors from Power BI also as functions within the mQuery language. The mQuery language is the language we use for Power Query. And it's also actually Power Query, what's happening behind the thing. So M language executing.
But that somehow translates into SQL, right? Before it hits Trino, right?
No, the input process is just M language. It's a Microsoft programming language developed by them. I don't know what is behind the scenes. I don't know what's under the M language.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's M language talking to the REST API. Okay. And it's there in the M language, in the connector logic, the connector is passing on SQL statements via the statement endpoint.
That's what's coming from Power BI. So Power BI generates the SQL statements as part of its thingy. Yeah.
And then it's processing the responses.
Wow, that's cool. So you started this sort of like as a like, oh yeah, I can hack this together kind of thing. I know about these pieces. And then you decided to open source it and throw it on GitHub.
Exactly, yeah.
Cool. And so you reached out to me, I don't know who reached out to whom, but anyway, because it seems to be getting more traction and people are getting interested in it, right? So how has the project been going?
It's like always waves. I feel like it's always waves, but now it's a little bit more calm. But some time ago, I had a few requests, and yes, they are using it in their project. So one guy was talking about the data mesh architecture, and they wanted to use this connector.
So there's big commercial entities that are like using this in their projects.
At the end, I don't know who the company was, but it was like a big data mesh project, yes.
That's how it goes with open source sometimes, is you only hear from about like 1/10 to 1/20th of the people actually using your thing. So if 3 people have asked for things, there's another 40 people using it without even making a peep.
It's like, yeah, it could be. Also, you see, for example, the issues raised. There are also a few issues raised, and they also come always in waves. I don't know why, but yes.
That's cool. So what's your experience with it? Has it constantly been evolving more, or did you just basically write it all and then it's been working since, or did you have to adapt to any changes in Trino much? Or
I did, or also a contributor did, edit the OAuth authentication capability. So you can also use OAuth authentication. This was added by a contributor. I added another functionality where you could directly write a native SQL query, sending this query to the backend, to Trino. But because before it was just the import experience, and it's generating the SQLs for you. And so you could write your own SQL query and sending just this SQL query to Trino. This was also one feature request.
So that's in Power BI. You have like a generic, like I'm writing a SQL, send it, and that now works with your connector.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Because that's like not that common typically, right? Like a lot of these Power, like a lot of those BI tools, they just do whatever the hell they do and send lots of queries. Some of them are rather dumb, but like they just send a lot of them.
Yes, for example, this native query, you could also build a, you could also develop a view on the backend side. It would have the same effect. You could also build a view and then you connect to the view. I would rather do that than have some logic within the Power BI itself. This would be my approach, you know, but yes, both solutions work.
So you've been having the project out there, but personally you probably don't use it that much, right?
I've never used it in production, so I've just played around with it.
That's cool. So you would love for other people that do use it in production to let you know how it's going and stuff like that, right?
Of course, yeah. I also think it's stable because if there are not many issues raised, it's a good sign. So. Yeah. And also all my testings, I think they were quite good. But there is one contra for my connector, which is better with the ODBC connection, with the ODBC driver, which is import mode versus direct query mode.
Yeah, you have to explain that. So there is some performance implementation? Like tell us about that. What are you meaning with that? Import mode versus direct connect kind of.
You have basically two connection modes when you connect to a database, which is import mode or direct query. And in import mode, it's connecting to the database and it's importing all the data into the in-memory analytical engine of Power BI. And then once it is there, so the database, you could turn off the database. So you don't need the connection anymore because it's everything already in Power BI, which also allows fast analytics. And...
But that only works for small data sets, I'm assuming, right? Like it's, so that's maybe a funny question then related to like the Power BI. Is it a pure desktop application or a pure web application? Or is the like where it, like it actually runs for a server for multiple user, or is it both? Like how?
Yeah, usually you develop in Power BI desktop. It's where it's your developer environment, and then you usually publish, once you're done, you publish the repo to the Power BI service. But Microsoft is also improving a lot lately the developer experience for you in the UI. So I think one day maybe we could even get rid of Power BI Desktop, but I don't know. So that's my personal opinion.
But so essentially, when you have this import mode, all the data gets downloaded to your desktop, right?
Yeah, it's like a small little local cache.
Exactly. It's like that, yeah. It's the analysis. Earlier it was called analysis services for Microsoft, and it's like built in into Power BI. So the engine is still the same. And yes, it's loaded into your local computer. And then once you save the file, I think the analysis services is shut down in the background, so it's not loaded. But once you open the file, everything is loaded in memory. And yes, then you have your in-memory analytical engine locally.
But that must suck a lot of data, doesn't it?
Like no, the compression rate is really good. So Power BI compresses really good. So it's not made for big, huge data sets, but it's okay for like ERP databases or CRM databases. It's enough. You can perfectly import it.
Yeah, when you're looking at one table, that sounds pretty reasonable for doing your manipulations and visualizations and getting your query exactly right without having to stress the underlying engine. So there's a difference between these two modes with your connector. You were saying one mode works a little better or worse?
No, and the other mode is the direct query mode. So nothing is stored within Power BI. It's just sending the generated queries to the backend and retrieving the result. And currently my connector is reusing the web contents function, which is the web connector, and the web connector does not allow direct query. So my connector can just import data, but you cannot like back and forth direct query mode. It's not possible with the connector, which is on the other hand with the ODBC connector, because this ODBC connector is easier to implement the connection from Power BI to the ODBC connector, and then everything what is happening behind ODBC, like talking to the REST API, is handled within the ODBC driver.
Mm-hmm. It feels kind of like an arbitrary limitation, though, right? Like, since your web driver goes against the Trino REST API, and an OODC driver also just goes against the Trino REST API, it's just like another layer of indirection. It feels a bit like random that that is how it works. I mean,
yeah, I think it would make it makes sense, because if you imagine every interaction on your report triggers a query. So imagine each interaction of, I don't know, thousands of users would trigger a normal REST API. You know, it's traffic-wise, it's not, or performance-wise, it also will not perform very well.
Yeah, so this saves on, you know, like compute in a big way, where instead of letting the database and engine do all of the work for everyone all of the time, it's, as long as they're not looking at too much data, their own machines can be shelving this burden and keeping the Trino cluster like relatively free of heavy workloads. So it's an interesting architecture. Do you want to show us how it works? I think you've got a demo set up for us, right?
Yes, we can go through a little demo. Yes, this is the repo. I think there is a link on the website then for Power BI on the Trino website.
Yeah, and we'll also be adding it to the show notes so everyone can find the details for sure.
So yes, on clicking the link, you will land here. This is the repo. Everything what I'm going to say, it's actually part of this documentation, but I know reading documentation sometimes boring. So I will quickly show you how it works. So when you have the repo, if you want to use the connector, you have two options. You could use it as is, so there is a compiled version in the repo, or you open it with Visual Code and what's it called, Power Query SDK extension, and you can make your adjustments, and then you can compile your own version.
And that's what that's the, using that M language that you mentioned, and that
exactly, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. I never heard about that before.
And this here is linked the MEZ file. This is the compiled version. Here is the link. This is the link in the repo. So you can just download this and could use it like this. So you don't need to have installed Visual Studio Code. And yes.
And you download that into your Power BI installation locally, right?
No, you need to drop it into a dedicated folder, which is called Custom Connectors. This is okay. Where you need to drop it, and then you can start Power BI Desktop, and then you have it in your selection available. This is how you use it. That's the most simple case. If you want to make adjustments, though, you can open it in Visual Studio Code. And I've seen some users trying to make adjustments but opening the repo in the wrong way. So this is basically the cloned repo, but you need to open the repo on this level. This is the connector, because for example, I have two windows open. This is the highest level, and then here you have the Power Query SDK, and it's not recognizing the project because you're on the wrong level of the folder, and then you're getting something like this. Expect only one Power Query file ending with either PQ or R. And if you go one folder further down, you're on the right level. This is the connector. Also, you can see the Power Query SDK recognized the connector. You can see also here logging. Logging's about the content, and the actual code is this one. This is M and Power Query. And for example, here is the statement endpoint. And everything what you then do in Power BI Desktop or in Power BI, it's everything generic and then generated based on this chain of commands, let's say, or chain of functions.
So is that, and then that M language seems like a pretty complete language, like, you know, has if statements and all kind of stuff like that. That is then compiled, right? Like that METS is a a binary package sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, you have it here in the binary. So you, once you click, you can say run build task. So you can compile it like this. Then you have to choose this, make a PQX file, and then it's building the connector. And then you have it in your in this folder, 3 folder hierarchy, Trino, emiset. That's now the new one.
Cool. And then, how is that in terms of compatibility with different versions of Power BI? That's pretty much like, do they change their SDK a lot, or like that can it's been sort of easy?
No, that's backward forward compatibility. So that's everything fine. So I've never had problems with the versions.
That's always nice.
But most users, as you said, can just download the Trino file, like the Trino Mets file from the GitHub repo, and throw it into that.
Exactly. Yeah. Some weeks ago, I think it was, there is the part, for example, where a data conversion is happening, data type conversion is happening. Mm-hmm. And we had a problem, for example, I think it was timestamp. But it was timestamped with time zone or something like this, and it was difficult to handle for each user because you have different regions, you have different time zones, and how would you parse them up for all of the users, you know? So I just made a text out of it, and now you have text in Power BI as the data type, but you can adjust this still in Power BI. So you can make a post step, let's say post transformation step, and make this adjustment within Power BI.
To sort out what time zone you want to actually use or whatever.
Yes, to not cut anything wrong here already, because it would be an error in the connector. And this way it's more flexible and generic. That's why it's text.
That's always a fun edge case for engineers, is anyone who's ever worked with date and time values and timestamps and time zones knows that it's honestly one of the hardest problems to solve, because there's so many considerations and ways you can go wrong or ways you can be off by a little bit. So I like the idea of, you know what, like, rather than deal with it, it's text, do with it what you want. It's not going to be my fault that it goes wrong.
in my projects, I now started to use Unix timestamps, really, through the entire solution, because you have just the integers. They also perform usually better, but at the end, sometimes you need to make the conversion because it's not readable. But in terms of transformations and readability and
So how do you run a query with this? Do you have the ability to go execute some SQL right now?
Yes, we can take a look. I have a Trino instance running locally with the Docker example. It's running here already. Here I have the UI. There is nothing happening right now. I have here this is the service. I have here Power BI Desktop. And here you would say now get data. And these are already the common data sources, but you can see here more. And then you have lots of connectors. The list is getting longer and longer. And for example, I mentioned before the web connector, which is this one. And also, for example, the SQL I'm taking now SQL Server, because here, if I go one step further, you can see the connection modes, what I was talking before. Here you can choose data connectivity mode. Mm-hmm. And I haven't this option, for example, for my connector. That's why I'm showing this for SQL Server.
Yeah.
So then let's look for Trino. This is my connector, and this is a connector from Azure Kubernetes. It's also quite new. Also, Azure Kubernetes service is also quite new, the HD Insight. So this is managed by Microsoft. It does not work. I don't know if it's working for a normal Trino environment. I don't know, I've never tried it. Outside of Azure Kubernetes, I mean.
Okay.
I don't know, so I cannot say that.
So that is for Trino on, okay.
Azure. But also this is working with ODBC, I guess. So it's not natively as my connector. This is also requires a connector.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's, it comes bundled with
your episode, you know.
But it comes with PowerVR, so that's the nice thing. Yeah. You don't have to add any custom connector. So then let's take mine. And yes, the most simple way to get it working is to have the host name, which is my machine name in this case. And then you have a port. You can remove this HTTP part. Here you could provide a catalog, a user. You could also retries, timeouts. And this is what I mentioned before, the native SQL query. If this is empty, I'm getting all the catalogs, I'm getting all everything listed, and I can then choose. And if I write here a query, it's directly taking this query. So I will go now for listing the experience.
So typically you on a sizable Trino cluster, you obviously wouldn't want to leave this empty. Because like there's gonna be way too much data in there, right?
Yes, or you already solved it in your views on the database side. The filtering, for example. Then yeah. You could go with this import experience. So now it's figuring out what's happening, what's there in your Trino instance. For example, you see here already queries, show catalogs.
Okay, so it goes and looks at all the catalogs, all the schemas, and then all the tables, and then it sucks all of them down.
Exactly, and then you're getting, so now it's just a catalog level, and then once you open this level, it's triggering the schema level, and it's retrieving the schemas.
Okay, so we've just run show schemas, and now...
Exactly, yeah. Show tables, next step.
Yeah. And now we can click on a table, we're going to select all the data from that table.
Yeah, we can select a table, and then we're getting a preview. We also will see this query in the UI. Maybe it was too fast.
You can click finished, and it'll...
Here we go. Ah, okay, where is it? Ah, this one.
Yeah, there, yeah.
Ah, yeah, finished.
So that's all the queries it fired into.
This one was the customer query, I guess.
Yep.
Cool.
And yes. Customer, I don't know. Let's take the nation table as I think this is more so we can make the import to not wait too long.
So really the analytics use case around this is very much around like you decide what data you want and then you get the data and then you can do as much analysis quickly locally as you want, right?
Exactly. And for example, if I click now load and I'm getting the data into Power BI, as I said before, you could turn off your Trino because it's not busy anymore.
Yeah, so once you've loaded your data into Power BI, it's locally cached in memory. Super fast, and you can do whatever visualizations, manipulations, modifications to it you need. So, for example, if you have that timestamp column with time zone, you can go clean that up and make sure it works exactly right. But if you just have good data, you can start looking at all those graphs on the right, which scare me because that's so many different graphs, because this is a really powerful tool.
And that's just the built-in visualizations. Then you have a custom visualization library. So you can also look in the marketplace for custom visualizations. So there is a lot more. So,
whatever you need, whatever you want to do, Power BI is one of the industry standards for data visualization. So it's going to be really good at it. And loading in from Trino means it's pretty easy. This is actually pretty cool. I'm impressed with how smooth that is to get your data loaded and then get to work with it.
For example, the import mode comes really... I just wanted to say that the import mode is comes in really handy if you have, for example, a cloud database, Azure SQL Server, for example, and you pay for it when it's running, and you could say, okay, now import all data into Power BI, and then you can turn off your cloud database, and you're not gonna charged anymore. So that's
yeah, especially if you get like charged per query or whatever else, you're not running that many queries to get all your data in.
But of course, you're downloading a lot of data potentially at first, right?
Yes, yeah, and you always need to refresh the data to get the current data. So you're always out of sync. So you don't have live data in your Power BI.
Yeah. How does the refreshing work? Like, do you just basically, like, is there any smartness to it, or you basically have to just go and load everything again?
Yeah, it's just like clicking refresh and everything is happening again. So everything gets removed. The current storage in memory, it's getting removed.
Okay.
Yeah. And everything is going to be loaded again.
But you're not losing any of the work you've done in terms of creating images, like creating diagrams and tables and all that kind of stuff. That stays. And then it just gets recomputed with the new data. Right?
Exactly, yeah. So visualization layer and data integration layers are different layers, so they are decoupled.
Yeah, so if you wanted to make a weekly report, you could make your visualization, get everything set up with a specific table, and then every Monday you could come in, load fresh data from Trino one time, and you'd have your reports generated all over again.
Yeah, well, for example, in data warehousing, in typical data warehousing use cases, you don't need live data, so you say, okay, I run it once a night, it's enough.
Yeah.
And you can save lots of money for your cloud services. So at the next step, we are now here still in Power BI Desktop, so in my local environment. So the next step would be to publish this into the Power BI service to make it consumable for end users. This would be the next step. So here you have this publish sign. You first need to save it.
So this is a good opportunity to say, you know, if you're curious about how all this works, there's so many resources out there about how to use Power BI. So you can go look up other YouTube tutorials to our viewers of this. This is well-treaded ground at this point. So it's once you've imported your data and got it in from there, it's the world is your oyster, and you can do whatever you want to do with all the other tools and integrations that exist in this ecosystem.
Yeah, it works the same way for every data source.
Exactly, yeah.
So these are now the workspaces you have access to with the user you're logged in to the right top. These are my workspaces where I have access to. I made a Trino workspace, and I select this one. For example, you could give users access to different workspaces. It's like just like a folder.
Mm-hmm.
It's not connected to
And if you do that for multiple users, you can also then just refresh it once and all of the users get the new stuff, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's like a whole separate storage and like data distribution layer outside of whatever the data sources are.
See if this works real quick.
So this is currently a custom connector, right? So you have to manually install it. But you showed us the list of like connectors. There's like a ton of them. So could this connector become a non-custom, like included one somehow? Okay. Or what's involved in that?
A Trino workspace.
We'll finish our demo first and then we can.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Publish a report, you always get two artifacts, which is okay.
Okay, and when we publish, it's now accessible to anyone in our organization. Oh.
I think his laptop might have given up.
Oh, no. Patrick did say that running Trino and Docker and Power BI and a couple browser windows was up against the ceiling of the available RAM he had. So,
yeah, let's see if he comes back. But very interesting, like how like it actually pulls the data in that way. Oh, he's already back.
There's Patrick.
Oh, yeah, I lost the connection.
Bummer. We were hypothesizing that maybe you ran out of memory there and your laptop gave out, but yes, I think we can call it on the demo there.
I will try it again, right?
We saw what happens.
Okay then.
So it's
should I process
as a
again?
Data source, load your data
into
your visualization.
Like, can you the data you can show it now, right? Like
I will try it again, okay?
Oh, okay.
Let's see.
You're going to need to share your screen in StreamYard real quick as well. There we go. We're
still
back.
Working nicely.
Did you see this already before? Or
yeah, we did see that.
Was I already gone? Okay. So well, when you publish an artifact, you're getting two artifacts, which is the semantic model or the data set, and you get the report. And for example, you could say here, refresh now, and I don't know if it will work in this case, because it won't work because you need a gateway to have custom connectors working, because they're not part of Power BI, so they're also not part of the Power BI service. So you need to run an on-premises gateway where you load the custom connector, and then everything what is loaded to Power BI is getting through the gateway, which means you also need a server running the Power BI gateway 24/7.
So the only way around that would be if your connector is not a custom connector, but it's out of the box included with Power BI.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's involved in that? Need to talk to Microsoft, I guess.
Yes. They want to have like productive use cases. They want to see clients using the connector, and then you can get it certified, and then it's bundled with Power BI. So then you can get it as part of Power BI.
Well, that's obviously difficult for an open source project where you're not even sure who's using it.
Yeah, we don't have the telemetry data to prove that it's in use aside from people showing up with questions or saying thank you. So if you have used this before and you want to see this get incorporated in a Power BI, maybe go do that. Give Patrick a message and say, hey, like we've been using this in production and that can help us make this happen.
Yeah. But otherwise, people do run these gateways. Like as a corporation, you can just run that gateway, right? Like in the cloud yourself.
Yes, also this gateway. For example, you also would use a gateway if you have on-premises machines, on-premises SQL Server, for example, just to bring data into the cloud. So it's not only for custom connectors. It's actually because of using on-premises services. So it's the gateway to the cloud.
So it's probably pretty common that organizations have that already anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. So then it's fairly easy for them to drop in your MITS file.
Especially if you run Trino, because Trino, open source Trino, you would run, I don't know, you would run locally, I guess.
People run it all over the place, cloud.
Yeah. It's
local data center, whatever. Just always many machines, many. That's the main thing that I'm like, typical use cases of Trino have a lot of data. And so that import mode, you wouldn't want to do that for like the typical use cases, but as you mentioned, if you do it on views or like subsets of data, pre-prepared queries in Trino that get you the data that you then want to do analytics on, then I think this is like really useful, actually, like really cool.
And I won't jump into the gateway part, but I already configured the gateway, and you can map it here to the gateway. this is my configuration, which I've already done. And you can just map it, you can apply it, and then you can establish a connection to your on-premises world.
Okay. Well, that's pretty smooth and easy.
And then once you have that data in your tool, how can you then query it? Like you pulled in what the customer and the nations table to then analyze that data.
Let me click again here on the refresh. It should work now. And we should see the refresh sign, and we should also see the queries here running. Or maybe it's too slow.
There it is.
This one is already gone, but yes. And it's refreshed. Oh, it's still refreshing, actually.
Now it's refreshed.
I think we can also see it. I think if you click on it, we can also see the refresh history. Yes.
So whatever report we generated in Power BI with whatever visualizations, our end data consumer can come online, say, I want to see that updated, click the refresh button, and get up-to-the-minute data with whatever we just pulled from Trino moments ago.
Exactly, yes. And also I've also seen people always publishing new reports with new, and when you publish a report, you also publish a new semantic model. But you can now build a new report based on the semantic model which already exists. You don't have to publish a second semantic model. Meaning if you refresh one data model, the changes are going to be reflected in all the reports.
So now that the data is imported into Power BI, how can you create reports? Like, you're probably not going to be using Trino SQL then, right? Like, you're using something else. Like, how are you working on and creating a list of nations or whatever?
For example, here you could create it in the Power BI desktop already on premises, or you can also create it here a little bit. It's not the full experience what you have in Power BI desktop, but you have also some features. And yes, for example, I don't know. Let's take a name. Comment. And here we see our nations.
So if you had numbers, you could make a line chart with it or whatever else you had. And it's just embedded into the Power BI window.
So this is completely UI driven then. So that's interesting.
Yes, and talking to the Power BI engine, so nothing is going back to the data source.
Very cool. Well, hopefully a lot of people find usage out of it already, and more will let you know and also find usage from it. I don't know, maybe we'll get this with enough users, we'll get it into the Microsoft bundling as well.
And thank you very much for the demo, Patrick. That's it's a powerful tool. I think if you're trying to do visualizations on gigabytes instead of petabytes of data, this is one of the best ways to do it, and works great. I mean,
yeah, it's a fantastic tool. I think, as we said before, if you have fields and maybe you have big data, but maybe you want to have aggregates or you want to just import aggregates, so that's also a good use case for using this open source connector.
Yeah, you can just let Trino do the heavy lifting for creating those views, and then you pull the data in, and then you make it look nice there. That's very true.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's the current status of the project, and what's your sort of wish list of more things? You mentioned that there's OAuth authentication someone fixed. I'm assuming you already have password authentication working. What are some of the other things do you think that would be nice to have? And if someone stepped up and contributed, you would love that, or things that you are thinking of working on or whatever.
Direct query mode. So that's the biggest improvement we could do on this connector. And it's difficult. I think it could work, but it's a little hacky. So there is no built-in way. But I think if you have time and an idea what's happening behind the scenes, you could get it, because it's, there is like a folding mechanism implemented, and with this query folding, you can you could somehow make this web function or web connector work to through folding, that it's never importing data, but you always use direct query. So I think it's theoretically possible, but yeah.
And you would have to implement that in this M language to like sort of work around the limitation that the web thingy, the web connector puts on you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Are you aware of any other connector that does that sort of thing? Like, I'm assuming there's a lot of connectors that are like sort of sitting on top of the web connector and hitting some REST API of some service. I don't know, Salesforce or HubSpot or whatever. There's probably a whole bunch of them. Are you aware of any others that like kind of like hack this together, or?
Yeah, I think there are. So most of the web connectors are just import mode, but I think there are direct query connectors. But for example, also what Microsoft is doing, they have a tabular data stream protocol, which is another layer of abstraction and making this, making the REST API, bringing the REST API into a database. So they also solve this at another level. For example, they have this for Dataverse. And it's also a sort of abstraction, like bringing REST APIs, making them consumable like a database.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's lots of them around, right? So that's interesting. So there is a glimmer of hope that we get this happening.
Maybe one day, yes.
All right, cool. Very, very much appreciated to get this demo and see the new connector. We will get the mention on the website, obviously, and get the show notes out, link to the repository, and hopefully you'll hear lots from our users that start playing around with this.
Yes, also from my side. Thank you for the session.
Yep. Of course, if you watch this and you have questions for Patrick, can you be reached on the Trino Slack?
Yes, I'm not really active, but I can be reached there. Yes.
Yeah, you can always search and ping. It's
yeah,
a good way to do it.
And we'll also have a link to your website, and there's lots of contact methods there. Yeah. And you're looking at your own repository and an issues file there, so that's cool.
Thank you one last time, and Patrick, we'll say goodbye to you as we wrap up and talk about what else is going on in the Trino community real quick.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Manfred, do you want to add your screen back and talk about the last couple things that we have in Trino news?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, this is really interesting as well, though. Like,
yeah, it is.
It's kind of like you would think it's kind of the wrong way, because the whole power of Trino is that it can query all this stuff. But at the same time, it totally makes sense. It's actually like for like how Patrick was saying, for some use cases where you just create the view and then you just like let people munch around on the data and like without wasting the resources of the server when they already have the data on the laptop or whatever. I think it's actually like really cool. And like the sharing and everything is in the wider server is interesting. It's kind of also really weird when you think about it, because essentially this is like a whole different data infrastructure of like databases and servers and like reports and everything again on that second level. That's the Power BI platform, whatever thing.
Yeah. It has the upside of getting analytics into the hands of users who may not know SQL, right? As if you're a data engineer and you have someone who wants to consume your data but doesn't want to write a SQL query, you can provide them with this like semantic layer of what exists in Trino that you want to look at, and then they can go use this UI user-friendly, easier to pick up tool to go understand, manipulate, and analyze that data. So I think there's definitely a key use case for it. And it's a cool tool, and I'm glad it exists out there.
Yeah, it's also interesting how, like, I just observed, you know, like, Microsoft Excel is, like, the bane of every business analysis and, like, any business intelligence user, because it's very, very widely used. Often also people consider it being abused as a business intelligence reporting tool. But at the same time, Power BI looks kind of similar. Like it has all the clicky kind of thingy around it. So I can see how you can sway users out of Excel and all the headaches that that produces into Power BI easier than in some other tools. So it's very interesting.
Well, that aside, Manfred, we have something important to announce that I don't think we've mentioned to people yet.
Well, we did have something happen last week and we are sending out the videos and all that kind of stuff. We will provide slides. We thanked our sponsors and everything. But yes, something is in the planning for
December 2024.
Yes.
So
Trino Summit 2024 is coming. And I will on the 11th and 12th of December, 2 days. So more sessions, more Trino goodness, more Commander Banban, deeper dives on more things. So it should be awesome again. And we do not have call for speakers and sponsors out yet, but you can already register.
Yeah. So you know what dates it are. It is. Dates it are, the plurals. If you would like to speak, we'll probably be opening up call for speakers in about a month. And we'll announce when that happens. But if you just want to attend or you plan on being there, block it out on your calendar. It'll be probably about 6 hours both days. So we'll have lots of talks, lots to hear about. And if you thought Trino Fest was good or you feel like you missed out, make sure you attend Trino Summit.
Yeah, and stay tuned for a blog post about Trino Fest and all the videos and slides coming soon. But as Cole mentioned, the videos are already online and on YouTube, so you can share all that information already. And yep, all the speakers were really amazing and the sessions were really interesting and very wide variety of topics, I think. It was very interesting to see, like, you know, really large scale migration stories, but also very small usage cases, deep dives on
Lake
some development.
Represented. We had vendors represented. It was really all over the place.
Yeah, it was a good event. And then of course on Friday we had the Trino Contributor Congregation, which was I was thinking it was a very productive collaboration of many, many stakeholders in the Trino community. And we'll have a lot of things to think about in terms of figuring out how we improve the release process or the notifications around things that are bad or whatever. We have more projects coming in and everyone wants to help Trino and we love that. It's awesome. So
yeah,
the project is going to continue to grow.
Stay tuned for more as always. But yes. I think for us today, that's about all we had to say. So thank you for watching. All of the people watching on YouTube after the fact, thank you to our few live viewers. We always appreciate you. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Music for the show is from the Mega Man 6 gameplay album by Krzysztof Swabikowski. Don't forget to give us a star on the Trino repository at github.com/TrinoDB/Trino. And for more information on future shows and to find show notes, check out trino.io/broadcast.